All right, welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. I'm here, as always, by myself. Alex Chester has four kids and now no podcasts. He's done. No, he probably has a podcast. He probably didn't skip a week of the Pretty Good Curb podcast with Av. I'm guessing he still did that. But he's not here for, I think this is the third one I'm doing on my own. Akiva, famously tech incompetent, is recording episodes by himself and just praying for the best, hoping no edits are needed, because I certainly would not know how to make them. And we're back with a returning champion, a frequent Giant guest. I think this is the second or third or fourth time on the podcast, Yoni Wiesel, talking the New York Football Giants. Yoni, are you here?
What's going on? Returning champion? Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on Jeopardy, you would come back the next night. It's because you won. If you were, like, horrendous, we wouldn't have asked you again, probably.
Right. Unlike the person who said they were going to go 16-0 that year.
Whose name? Yeah, I mean, the truth is, yeah, the famous Giants preview of Josh Berliner, when he sort of did an amazing bit where we did the schedule game, and he very sort of, like, subtly had them going 16-0, but we didn't catch on until, like, 9 or 10 that we started laughing. I think we had Josh on again after that. He's welcome to come back if he's interested at some point. But Yoni's been on for you were like the white whale in the old Ari Gold 32 Fans days, because we would always have like scheduling snafus, right? Like I'd be like, hey, do you want a podcast? And then like you'd fall asleep, or I'd fall asleep, or like your like roof would cave in, or your internet would die, or you were supposed to be on and like at 9:02 you weren't there. I'm like, all right, finding a new Giants fan, he's 2 minutes late. So it took a long time to have you, but now I feel like we've been in a better place.
Yeah, I think we're sort of set now. With these previews, and I'm happy. Last year we didn't do it. I think last year you did some sort of you and Alex just ran through some stuff. You sent me some questions that I had really bad answers to, and thankfully didn't send, because it was real bad. I had all sorts.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, we sent listeners questions. Yeah, because we didn't do any fans. We quit the fans last year. It was just 32 days, no fans. But I like the fans better, because it's less research for me. You know, you just ask a question and then you get the guy going, and he knows the team better than me. Yeah. Back in like when I was working for NBC and I really was like, I really knew it was flying on all 32 teams, like backwards and forwards. I would get in the fights with the fan. Like I would for sure know their team better. And it was just like a lot of screaming matches. I don't know if those shows are still available, but it was like, I just get on with a Dolphins fan. We just like yell about like who's better, the Jets or the Dolphins, for 32 minutes. They were like really bizarre podcasts. Nothing like the modern 32 fans. It was just like whoever was the guest could not be the guest the next year, because like we were no longer on speaking terms with them. It was very strange. We've grown up a lot in the last 10 years, Yoni. Yeah,
clearly. I mean, Alex must have done a lot to keep you in check, I'm guessing.
Yeah, Alex is really, he's the mature one. I want to go straight to Daniel Jones, because I was thinking about this when we were talking to our Cowboys fan, which was the one I recorded before. This is Jordan Parhar. I feel like Daniel Jones' basement and ceiling has so much variance, because if he was out of the league in 4 years and like this was his sort of Josh Freeman season last year, where it's like, all right, he was like playing above his head, and I like, okay, I'd say like that's normal. And if you told me Daniel Jones is like a perennial, I don't think his ceiling is like becoming what is Daniel Jones? All right, let me ask you, what is Daniel Jones' ceiling?
So this is a really good question. I actually disagree with you on the first part here. And generally, just to throw this out there, and it may be clear as time goes on, I'm not one of those fans who has a rosy picture all the time, who always assumes the best.
You're a famous Gettleman hater. You loathe Dave Gettleman. You come on every year.
I am such a Gettleman hater that when you sent the email last year asking about the team, I basically said, I hope Daniel Jones fails so that Gettleman will get fired, because the only way this team will ever be good is if Gettleman is gone. That I kind of have taken a step back on that, because Daniel Jones really is the only thing that matters at this point for the team, you know, considering where they are in their trajectory building. And I don't agree with you that I would be very surprised if Daniel Jones is out of the league in 4 years. He really, really surprised me last year. He surprised a lot of people, I think. I think most people either want to see more from him because he didn't play at a big college program, or they'll point to all the turnovers and, you know, think that that's a reason why he may have issues.
Well, the fumbles, interceptions, you can change easier than fumbles, in my opinion. Fumbles could be a tech problem. It could be a hand size issue. Like there's a lot of reasons why someone fumbles, and like, and let's say somebody like Jameis fixed their interception problem, and we've seen plenty of, you know, the Testaverdes of the world who came in throwing interceptions and left the league 25 years later throwing interceptions. Like, it's possible to fix, but it's not automatic. But the fact that he fumbles, I think he fumbled 10 times last year. It, like, he is a turnover machine.
Right. So the fumbles definitely show a lack of pocket awareness. That is a big issue. And it's tough because some of the best things that we saw Daniel Jones do were when he really stuck in the pocket and made incredible throws under intense pressure. The problem is, if he's the flip side of that is that sometimes he doesn't notice the pressure and he ends up fumbling when it hits him. So, you know, I don't know if part of fixing the fumbles, getting the ball out faster, would take away from some of those amazing plays, or maybe that's just who he is. I'm not sure. Supposedly he put on a whole lot of muscle this offseason to try to alleviate some of that. But, you know, who doesn't do that in the offseason? As we well know, everyone comes in the best shape of their life for each training camp each year. So he's definitely doing some work to get past that fumble problem. But even with that, even if he has the same year he did last year a bunch of times, you know, maybe improving a little bit on the turnovers, I still think that that's a quarterback who can stick in the league. Like, he really did a lot of impressive things. He was a very, I think he's, you know, objectively looking to be a good minimum good quarterback who can stick around the league, middle of the pack, maybe at least like the 20th best quarterback in the league. Even if he doesn't do a ton of correcting, as you know, I mean, I'm not a scout or anything like that. I don't watch the tapes. From a lot of stuff I've heard on different podcasts, he has serious issues with zone defense. He's great against man. He was amazing. He was like a top five quarterback last year against man. I'm like a bottom three quarterback against zone. So if he doesn't fix that, obviously everyone's just going to throw zones at him and he'll never really get anywhere. But you know, he's, from everything we hear about him, from his MO all along, he's a smart kid. He's a very hard worker. You know, he's the type of guy who is certainly going to be trying to get better. This isn't going to be, you know, it doesn't seem like he's just going to let things go how they've been and just come back each year like that.
Interesting. Yeah. I, you know, we started with Daniel Jones because I was just thinking about him, but I do really want to get into the judge. So what have you seen? It's a weird year to judge a rookie coach in general, no pun intended, because you're not going to see any, you know, the first game he's ever going to coach on any level, right, is a regular season game. You know, it's a very bizarre, it's almost like, you know, how good are your tech skills and how good is your sort of like IT department and how, you know, how well are the assistant coaches running meetings and stuff. It's such a bizarre year for a rookie head coach, especially like, you know, not just a new head coach in the building, but a guy who's never been a head coach before. So what have you seen from Joe Judge? Has he with the media? Has he said anything Gettlesome-ish that's troubling? Do you like him? What's the deal with Joe Judge?
So early on at the first introductory press conference, he said a lot of things that most people liked. You know, he gave all the hard-nosed platitudes. We don't judge, you know, people point to it as being very Belichickian because, as he, you know, people probably know, he came off, he's coming from the Patriots. He was their special teams coach for a number of years. Before that, he was at Alabama with Nick Saban. So he's been with these hard-nosed type of head coaches who you know, they actually live the platitudes. You know, they coach like, you know, every man's the same. We try to do things we coach the strengths of our players, stuff like that. You know, most people heard that as Giants fans, and they're coming off Pat Shurmur and Ben McAdoo. They were thrilled. That was all they needed to hear. And I was like, you know, that's kind of generic. It literally means nothing. And great, he's saying the right things, but, you know, we can't be such, you know, such an abused fan base that even hearing someone say something decent in their first initial press conference is going to set everyone off that way. But again, most fans are, you know, optimistic, like to be optimistic. I get that. But you know, he did a lot of other Belichickian type things early on. He famously didn't mention Daniel Jones's name once in any of like his first few months of press conferences that he did. Like, the name literally didn't leave.
As if he was a rookie. Yeah.
Like what?
As if he was a rookie. Like, sometimes you don't say a freshman's name, let's say in college, or, you know.
No, it was more of a, like, he wouldn't even mention who he's excited about coaching, who the players, he didn't mention any names of players on the team.
Like, so he was just being generic and boring in the Belichick style, you're saying?
Somewhat, yeah. But to Giants fans, that's super exciting. To the Giants media, that was super exciting. You know, the Giants fans, like to believe we like to believe that we're that hard-nosed team. We're one of the original NFL teams. We're all defense. We're running. We're this super old school team that we actually literally haven't been in like 20 years at least, despite winning Super Bowls on the backs of the defensive line. Like, this has always been like, this has been an offense first team for and a throwing team for so long. So everyone likes, they like to hear that stuff. Like, it feels authentic Giants to them. But, personally, I think it's just way too early. This has been a strange, with a strange offseason. We really don't know anything. We're not going to know anything. Even through the first year, we probably won't know too much. The famous thing he's doing right now, which is another, old school hardcore thing, is yesterday the Giants had their first live practice in pads. And every time people missed assignments or screwed up something, he made them run laps like they were in grade school.
Yeah, that made the national news, yeah.
Yeah, and all the Giants writers and stuff were all very like, oh, this is great. He's hard-nosed. He's tough. He's, kind of – they'll pay like some lip service to the fact that adults don't like to be treated like they're in high school. But, there are a few players who came out and said the right thing also. And it's possible a lot of these players are just happy to have someone who seems like they know what they're doing. We'll see how that goes, but this seems to be, he's definitely bringing a very old school type mentality. I think the thing that I'm more excited about with him is his coaching staff. I think he did a really interesting job of putting together his coaching staff. He brought in a number of ex-head coaches, so people who are head coaches in other places that can be really helpful for a guy like him, who's literally never been, I don't even think he's been a coordinator anywhere. He's really right. Just been, special teams coach. And last year they gave him the tag of wide receivers coach. But he's really never had any sort of a head coaching type position. So they have, I think, three guys on the roster who are assistant coaches who are former head coaches. Famously, they have their offensive coordinator is Jason Garrett, who just came over from the Cowboys.
You have the most famous offensive coordinator in Garrett, but you also have maybe the least known defensive coordinator in Patrick Graham.
Yes, who is coming over. That was an interesting one also. He's also part of the Belichickian tree, so they work together in New England. But he was defensive coordinator for the Dolphins last year, who didn't really have anything going on in their defense that would make anyone say, oh, that's the guy we need to get.
Right. At least he has DC experience. Like, he wasn't like a quality control coach in New England. They hired as a DC.
Right. No, that's true. I think they took the quality control people also. So they have,
I'm sure. So their
offensive coordinator, they have Jason Garrett, their tight ends coach, who's also like an assistant head coach, is Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah.
Who was famously a terrible head coach, but, he was a great offensive coordinator.
Yeah, he's overqualified to be a tight ends coach, yeah.
Yeah. And on the defensive side, they have Brett Bielema, who's the coach at head coach at Wisconsin. And Arkansas, I think, or?
Yes, Wisconsin and Arkansas. Yeah, he went from Wisconsin. He was great at Wisconsin, went to Arkansas and flamed out the SEC.
Right, and then after that, he went over to New England, and he was one of the defensive coaches for Belichick, and Judge brought him over too. Staff looks good. The staff, there's a lot of guys there to be excited about as far as that goes. But for Joe Judge, he says a lot of the right things. He looks the part, but we'll see what happens when games start.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's really no way to judge. No, again, I'm not trying to make any sort of pun. It's just, it happens, about your coach. All right. By the way, the funniest thing looking through this roster is that, Saquon's backup is Deion Lewis, who knew that Deion Lewis was still in the NFL. Deion Lewis, like, is one of those guys who you thought was like a second year player when he was like at his best on the Patriots, but really he had sort of like bummed around like the waiver wire for 5 years and was actually like 28 then. And now has been like completely washed for like, a few years in Tennessee. Maybe he's like, let's play the age game with Deion Lewis. How old do you think he is?
Oh, I would have guessed like 32, 33, but.
But now I think that's too old, like how long ago was this?
He wouldn't still be in the league.
Exactly. Yeah.
So actually,
I would guess 30.
Yeah, so he's 29. He's turning 30 in a month.
Okay. So this is age 30 season. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm making fun of for someone being old who I'm exactly, one day plus 7 years older than. So maybe I'm, if he's washed up guy, what am I? But yeah, that just made me laugh that Wayne Gallman, who's in his fourth year in the NFL, but it feels like his 30th year of doing absolutely nothing. And Deion, those are Saquon's backups. Do you think, what are the chances that this is Saquon's best year of the three? What do you think?
What are the chances? I don't know. I still think the rookie year will probably stand out for at least another year, although the Giants do have their best offensive line that they've had by far in his 3 years and probably in the last close to a decade since our last Super Bowl, maybe. So that should be helpful, although there's really no cohesion because it's a bunch of – they only have two returning guys in the spots that they were – that they're returning in. So that could be – that could be a challenge to – even though the talent is much, much better.
Well, you're starting – you're starting rookie tackles on both sides, right?
So I don't think that – that right now, if you look up a depth chart, they'll say that Matt Peart, their third-round pick, who is actually a supplemental pick late, like picked like 99 or something like that. Mm-hmm. They are listing him currently as a starting right tackle. I think he's almost definitely not going to be a starting right tackle. It's more likely they're going to be Cameron Fleming or Nick Gates. Mm-hmm. Although they're trying Nick Gates out at center too. I think they hope Nick Gates will be the starting center.
They don't really have a center, right? I see Spencer Pulley's in there. Nobody here is really a name.
Right. Pulley was their starting center last year before getting hurt, I think, in the middle of the year. So he has experience playing there. He's just not very good. So it's possible he gets it just by default, but they've been working out Nick Gates and their fifth round draft pick, Shane Lemieux, who's a guard from Oregon. They've been working him out at center also. He's way too raw to get any time, but I would think it's either Nick Gates or Spencer Pulley at this point who are going to be the ones who
start. But for a team that drafted, Yoni, two tackles, this was at worst, the slightly below average offensive line. This was not like, it wasn't like Jones was running for his life and he was getting hit, to the degree of, there were four or five lines last year that couldn't block. I think Pro Football Focus had him like 20th. I think Football Outsiders had him bad, but not like just absolutely atrocious.
That may speak to the people who are beneath them because their offensive line was pretty bad last year for the most part. It was pretty bad. Over time, it got a little bit better. They had Mike Remmers at right tackle who started off a little rough, but actually held together and had a pretty solid year. And left tackle was Nate Solder, who had a lot of issues, but, wasn't completely incompetent for most of the year. Will Hernandez actually took a step back next to Nate Solder, which I kind of blame on Nate Solder a little bit because I feel like his play was a bit toxic. But hopefully everyone should be a little bit better, a little bit older. It's a pretty young line outside of Kevin Zeitler, who's, a consummate All-Pro, a former All-Pro, but a consummate professional who, is going to do a good job. But it will be a better offensive line for him. It's yet to be seen how they're going to structure their offense, if they're going to be handing him the ball a lot, if they're going to try to get him out in space, some screen passes and stuff, some stuff that, Pat Shurmur didn't really do nearly enough of. But we'll see what they're able to do with him. He's unquestionably the best player on the roster. So, hopefully they can actually do some things with him as opposed to what they did in the past.
Yeah, it's interesting. The same way I described their offensive line is probably like slightly below average as long as the center spot isn't just, the worst in the league, which is possible. I mean, they don't have a center right now, basically.
It is possible.
I'd say the receiver spot is also like probably slightly below average with not a ton of upside, but also like as long as people stay healthy, like a decent floor. You have Tate, Shepard, Slayton, and then all the CC guys, Cody Core, Corey Coleman. What do you think about the receiver position? Are you higher on it than me, or?
Yes. So as far as average league, talking about it from a league average perspective, there's so many good receiving cores in the league that to what it means to be league average, I don't really want to look at it that way so much, but I do think this is definitely a very good receiver group, barring health, of course. Darius Slayton to most people outside of New York and outside of a few weeks of fantasy, probably don't know who he is. He was a fifth round pick out of Auburn last year and was injured for the first few weeks of the season. And from the time he came back, he was phenomenal. And he is, I would say, unquestionably the number one receiver on this team.
Wow.
He did a lot of things that show that it was not a fluke. It's not, he was a bit of a speed guy coming out, but he showed a ton of nuance in his routes. And he really is someone who Giants fans are really excited about. Like he could be, he definitely has number one receiver potential based on what he showed last year. And that was a really phenomenal pick by Dave Gettleman in the fifth round last year. Shepard is a solid receiver, good receiver.
Can't stay on the field also.
Very big, but he has a big concussion issue where he could literally, his next hit could literally be his last.
Yeah, I would say Sterling Shepard is like, yeah, he's maybe 1 to 2 injuries away from just, being at the end of his rope. Because, yeah, he you look at a per game basis, he's actually pretty good. He's one of these guys, like, if he's got a spot in fantasy, like, oh, that's a good, like, third receiver when there's buys and stuff. But I don't know. It seems like he can't complete a game half the time.
Yeah. So he could be out at any moment. Golden Tate is still basically the Golden Tate of the last few years. You know, he doesn't get much separation, but he's got good hands and he can run after the catch. But, you know, he's also in his early 30s. At any point, a guy like him could fall off too. But he was pretty good after he came back from suspension last year. And, you know, I think it's actually a pretty good three-man group, especially when you think about Saquon coming out of the backfield, being one of the best receiving running backs.
Right. And Evan Engram. The truth is, I was thinking about this. I was reading about a long piece about, like, advanced metrics with regard to receiver separation. I don't know if you saw this. Evan Engram got more separation by almost, like, double than any other player in the NFL. He is always open. And part of that means that they're probably, you know, they were probably getting him the ball, you know, in sort of shorter yard swing pass type things where maybe he was not near a safety or a linebacker or something. But to have, like, it was almost like, it was literally almost double the second guy in the league. To me, shows like some sort of elite skill. And you watch him and it makes sense. I do think in a really good offense, Evan Engram would be an all pro. He would be a superstar. If this offense is humming, then it'll, you know, I think he may even lead the team in receptions and receiving.
A big part of that is just being able to stay on the field. Like a lot of the other guys in this roster, he's always hurt. So, you know, if he can stay on the field, I think, there's a really good chance he can be a, you know, top level tight end from an offensive perspective, from a receiving perspective. Obviously he has blocking issues, not as awful as everyone assumes, but not good. But if he could stay on the field, the Giants offense in total can be really, really good. If they keep everyone healthy, you know, the backups, there's not much to talk about there. Corey Coleman, you know, coming off a torn ACL, they say he looked good in camp so far, in the one day of camp, I guess. So if he's not showing real ill effects of the injury, you know, he could be an interesting guy, but they're really the biggest issue this roster has top to bottom is depth. The depth on this roster is non-existent. And if anyone gets hurt, you know, they're in big trouble, but if the offense stays healthy, this can be a very good offense. If Jones can, you know, build upon what he did last year and cut back on the turnovers a little bit, this really has potential to be a very, very good offense, which it's going to need to be if they plan on winning any games.
Yeah, I agree. There's not a lot of backups, you know, of note at any position. Colt McCoy is the backup QB. I haven't talked about him yet. Not a lot of names you'll recognize on offense or defense. They didn't have I don't know if they hadn't. Yeah, I think they had draft picks in every round, but maybe the fifth. But they really went heavy on a couple positions, right? I think they drafted three offensive linemen and at least three defensive backs.
Right. They drafted three offensive linemen in the first, third, and fifth. Then in the second, they took a safety. In the fourth, they took a cornerback. And then in like the sixth round, they had like three picks at the end of the draft that they used on like linebackers that are probably not going to make the roster. They were very focused on certain positions within the draft this year.
Yeah, so they're right. So there isn't a ton of depth. Let's switch to the defense. So let's start by talking about Leonard Williams. We fleeced you guys last year for Leonard Williams, who, you know, we had in the building, didn't really like. Would he be the best player on the defensive line? Yes, but would he be like 5% better than the next five guys? Probably also yes. And, he's an interesting guy. He's a lot like, if you remember years ago, I made fun of the Damon Harrison move because, like, all right, you know, a guy who had no value as a pass rusher and really plays first and occasionally second down in a league where fewer and fewer teams are running the ball, like, that's a valueless player, except, he's the best run stuffer in the history of the NFL, you know, which basically you'd have to be to have value that. But, like, obviously that worked out. And even last year when he was just okay, like, he was so frustrated that he wasn't elite, probably still has NFL skills. Leonard Williams, I don't know if it's effort. It's very strange. The same way that the Jets had Mo Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson, who flashed big and then seemed to get worse the second the Jets handed the money. Leonard Williams, like, never even hit that high, honestly. So what do you see from Leonard last year? And are you like, have you given up on him? Do you think, like, all right, he's like a Jag, just another guy? What do you think?
And so Leonard Williams will always be synonymous with one of the worst trades I could have imagined. It was the most senseless trade. It was a fireable offense on the spot, as far as I was concerned, for Dave Gettleman. I cannot believe he still has a job after the numerous gigantic blunders that he has made as a general manager, really capping off with Leonard Williams trade, which made no sense. So Leonard Williams as a player is, like you said, he's good. He's good against the run. He's more of an end than a nose tackle, a 3-4 end than a nose tackle. And he is good against the run. The difference between him and Damon Harrison is Damon Harrison really doesn't have any use on the field in third down. Leonard Williams famously is very good at getting hurries. He doesn't quite get to the quarterback, but he gets near the quarterback. And that people have been pointing out for years how, like, that's a sign he's going to break out at some point, and it hasn't happened yet, and it's probably not going to happen now. But he still is a very good player, a guy you want on your defense. You're just not a guy that you want for – you want to give up a third and fifth round pick for in a year where you're not going to the playoffs anyway, and not a guy you really want to pay $16 million a year to, which the Giants had to, because after making that atrocious trade, were literally held over a barrel by him as far as contract negotiation and had no choice but to franchise tag him. So he is the big name on this defense, I guess you would say. But this isn't really a defense with any names.
Was one of my notes is this is the biggest no-name defense in the league. Leonard Williams and Jabril Peppers are like the only players that, I mean, I guess if you're, you know, you watch enough games, like Blake Martinez's name, maybe you know from the Packers, but this is one of the more no-name defenses, you know.
I mean,
probably
Marcus
32nd out of 32 in the
Marcus
league.
Golden has two double-digit sack seasons, but like not impressive double-digit sack seasons, like the kind that you
and they're in Arizona in anonymity also, like, you know, playing on the other side of Chandler Jones.
Right. So, I mean, he had an injury right before becoming a free agent also, which led to a lot of it. But yeah, this is a no-name defense, and it's not a good defense. It's potentially a very bad defense. They're actually quite – and this is to the way that Dave Gettleman has built this defense. They're stout up the middle. They have a fantastic defensive the interior defensive line group with Dexter Lawrence, who was a first-round pick last year, Dalvin Tomlinson, who is pretty unknown but is a really good player. He's basically listed as their nose tackle right now, but it'll be a bit of they'll mix guys around, move guys around on the front three. He was the second round pick a few years ago, and Leonard Williams. And then up the middle, they just signed Blake Martinez to play inside linebacker there. They have an inside linebacker from last year named Ryan Connolly, who played two games. He was a fifth round pick who played two games before tearing his ACL. But he was incredible in those two games, and hopefully he'll be back healthy, to start this season, to work with Martinez in the middle there. But around the edges and the boundaries, you know, which is where the game is played right now, you know, you either need a pass rush or you need cornerbacks. They could not possibly be worse. It is the most atrocious group of pass rushers and cornerbacks you can imagine. And
then they lost their best one to a robbery.
Sorry?
Then they lost their number one corner to a robbery.
Yeah, so they went out in the offseason and they signed James Bradbury. They spent a lot of money on him from Carolina, who he was with Gettleman in Carolina. He's a very good number one corner. He's not a very good corner, actually. Not a very good number one corner. He's maybe in like a second tier of corners in the league. Mm-hmm. But he's good. And after that, their number two this year was supposed to be the first round pick last year, DeAndre Baker, who famously was a part of, not only did he rob people at gunpoint in a bar, but he also very obviously went around and tried to cover it up by having his lawyer, you know, openly reaching out to the victims to tell them to recant their story.
Who among us hasn't done something like
and
that?
And really,
though.
I don't judge him. Really, really weird stuff. Mm-hmm. It's really just a sad situation more than anything else. You know, 1 year in the league, he was atrocious last year, but had potential, and now he's gone. The next man up was supposed to be Sam Beal, who was the supplementary pick 2 years ago in the third round. And he was injured most of the last 2 years, and he was supposed to step in. He decided to opt out of the season, which basically leaves the Giants, their official starting outside cornerback on the other side of James Bradbury is Corey Ballantyne, who was a sixth-round pick last year out of Washburn. So that basically sums it up. He's the next man up. They have Julian
and
Love.
Like you said, there's no replacements because they, you know, there is, you know, they drafted McKinney, right? But there's nobody else they drafted. There's really nobody else they signed.
Right.
There's not a lot of guys who aren't waiver wire material that could come in and play.
Right. So they have Julian Love, who they drafted in the fourth round last year, who actually played safety last season and was pretty good. They could put him outside, but he's really not such a good corner, which is why he was playing safety. They have their fourth round pick, Darnay Holmes, who is like a teeny little guy. And people are concerned he may not hold up as a corner at the NFL level, but was top recruit coming out of high school and was a good college player up until last year. So they're hoping to get the assumption was he's going to be the nickel corner, But again, he's never played before. He's a very small guy. Julian Love hasn't done it. Corey Ballantyne has looked terrible in times that he's played. Like, this team basically has no answers right now at cornerback. It's going to be really, really bad. And without having a pass rush to get to the quarterback faster so that you can at least give him, you know, force a bad throw or something, their edge rushers are, you know, Marcus Golden, Kyler Fackrell, Lorenzo Carter, O'Shane Zimenez, Stami, if you've heard of any of these people before. It's really, this defense, you know, you're not going to be able to run against them, but you won't need to because there's no way for them to stop any pass.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an elite QB division, right, with Wentz, Haskins, and Dak. I mean, it's fine. It's good. You know, Haskins isn't great. The other two guys are you know, Wentz is at least average. Dak is definitely way above average. And the Cowboys have maybe the best receiving unit. The Eagles are fine. The Redskins have one guy. I'm sorry for saying the R word. Washington has one guy. But I wanted to end with the win total. 6.5. There's only four teams lower. They're in the same boat as, I think, the Lions and Miami at 6.5. The Jets, in some places, you could even get at 7 if you wanted to bet the under. So Vegas and the whole country at this point is pretty down on the Giants' chances. Are you going over or under 6.5 wins for the 2020
Before
Giants?
The cornerback situation got really bad, I was thinking there was a chance they could get there. Now I am definite under. Barring, you know, look, with this year with COVID, who knows, people just dropping and not being able to play. If they get lucky with the schedule in that way, maybe they have a chance. If not, I think they're going to get another top five pick this year. I think this is just offenses, too. They have no depth. The defense is going to be real bad. And hopefully, you know, look, the bright spot is the offense will be able to throw the ball a lot. You know, hopefully we'll see some improvement from Daniel Jones, Darius Slayton, Barkley can look good. You know, they could play a lot of shootouts this year. But this